Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham, Scott, alongside, as always. Hello, Scott.
As always, Sean, I'm back.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this about me, Sean, but I really like playing Europa Universalis 4.
Sure.
It's a computer game. Grand Strategy. And I believe today, it's either today or yesterday, as we're recording, that Europa Universalis 5 came out.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So now I have to make the decision, as I am like 40 something years old, do I invest time into learning the new game mechanics of this new game, given that it took me probably like 2 or 3 years to really get good at EU4.
Sure. It's a tough question. Well, does it, you got to Marie Kondo it, Scott. Does it bring you joy?
Well, I don't know if the new one will bring me joy, right? Because the old one does. And I really like playing it. I played a lot of different campaigns with a lot of different goals. And the thought of like learning a whole new system of how to do things just seems a bit daunting, but at the same time, like, could be pretty great.
Yeah, that's true.
Or I can just look back at the time I've had, still play the old game when I want to, but just know that it's, you know, not getting updated.
Right. That's a tough one. Are the updates particularly important?
Yes. Yes, okay. They are.
Well, then... I don't know.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I don't know what to do. Maybe one of our listeners plays that game too and can tell me what to do. I watch YouTube of guys playing it, so maybe I'll do that for the new one and learn that way. And then, you know, maybe commit when I have a weekend to myself or something.
There you go. Could be a way to do it.
All right. All right. You've helped me through this moral quandary of what to do. And Sean, I guess, you know, we're recording for the first time since the World Series ended.
We are.
And we can talk a little bit at the end of the show about how we played this week. But I thought the ending of our game on Monday night was almost as tragic as the ending of the game on Saturday night.
I mean, that seems a bit much, I think.
Listen, we all put the exact same amount of effort into each of the pursuits, right? The amount that they put in is what we put in for those 2 hours that were on the ice. Yeah. Yeah. But pretty devastating finish to that game. I was a little shocked.
It happens. I mean, we definitely were better over the course of the first six ends, and then we're not for the last two ends.
Wheels fell off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
gotta lobby for those six end games.
Well, I mean, most places in this town, that's all you get.
That's true.
So yeah.
That's true. But so, what are we here to talk about?
One. Yeah. So here we are. It is November. Big month here in the world of curling. We got trials coming up here. We got trials in the United States. The Euros are coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun over the course of the next 6 weeks or so, because even as we get to December, we have the last chance qualifier out there in British Columbia. So a lot going on, and wanted to just take some time here, recap some of what's been going on, and talk about, you know, again, what matters, what doesn't matter. Next week, I think we'll do a breakdown of how important results are at this time of the year, looking ahead to the Olympic Games, and then we're going to get into previews of the various events and all that. So before we do any of that, just want to recap what's been going on. Very busy fall, as I say, here in the world of curling. And Scott, let's start with the final two berths at the Canadian Olympic Curling Trials, which will be held, of course, in Halifax, couple weeks ago, the pre-trials wrapped up out in Wolfville, and it's going to be Jordan McDonald and Selena Sturme advancing to the trials in the best of three finals that they each had to play. So let's start with the men. Jordan McDonald, Jacques Gauthier, Elias Humanicki, and Cam Olofsson out of the Winnipeg Curling Club. They get in, beating Braden Calvert and his team from Winnipeg. So as we look ahead at the trials, that is the last team in the field. Jordan McDonald will be the youngest skip at 22 years old. Don't know what their chances will be like. I'm confident that unless Brad Gushue does what he did 4 years ago, they'll be in the orange. They'll be the orange team out there in Halifax. But it's a nice accomplishment for them. Good job by them. Like to see a younger team in this field. The men's field skews, I think, a slightly older than the women's field here in Canada. So nice to have that younger team make it in, get that experience, and start to look ahead for them, I think, probably more so at the next quad than thinking about heading over to Italy in February.
I think so, yeah. But, you know, it was, what, 20 years ago that a young Brad Gushue was not expected to do much at the curling trials.
I don't think Russ Howard's walking through that door.
You don't think Jacques Gauthier is today's Russ Howard?
I think just a gnat's wing off.
Just
a hair.
Yeah, the pre-trials event was very even looking at the standings, right? And so it wouldn't have surprised you to see maybe any of those teams have a run and get there. Calvert and McDonald finished 5-2. They both finished at the top of the standings, setting up that best of three final. Scott Howard missed by a game. Jean-Michel Menard, Sam Buybrick we saw last year. Jaden King team out of London. So a lot of like parity, I would say, in that field, and that any team that advanced to the next was obviously going to be that eighth place team, not just based on the actual seeding, but based on reputation as well. So for a young team, you know, with a skip who's 22 years old, to get this chance to get this experience is what we talk about all the time, saying we need the younger teams to have the chance to play these other teams. And we don't want the slams to just be an incestuous playing each other all the time type of event. So getting this team that opportunity, I think, is really great for them. I think it would have been really great for Braden Calvert too. Obviously they're disappointed. It was a best of three that went to the full three games. So yeah, just, I think my takeaway from this men's pre-trials event is a lot of parity there in that sort of second level of men's curling right now, and something definitely to build on for the next trials.
Yeah, and I think as we look at that field, some of the folks that are in there, you had the Howard team as well, Scott Howard, his team was in that field. And so some of these guys that as the players from the like top of the table, the guys who are already in the trials, I would imagine some of them go away from the sport as we move ahead 4 years. Brad Gushue's already announced that on his side. And then, you know, Mark Nichols, who knows what happens there with that team. But then even the Harnan brothers, what do they want to do? Jacobs, Kennedy, Heber, right? There's guys there that are in that range where I wouldn't be shocked if they do another quad, but I also wouldn't be shocked if they don't do another quad. So what does the formation of these teams look like? And having guys in the pre-trials that can kind of now be drafted up of sorts and go play with potential, if you need to, again, depending on what lineup stuff happens with Dunstone, I'm sure Botro will go back to skipping, right? How many guys from this event kind of showed out and now we'll get up with those top level skips, and how many of the skips in this field will continue to grow and progress to become that top level guy?
Yeah, I think that's what I would rather see. I would rather see some of these teams go forward as full teams or, you know, threes or twos that then pick up some players along the way, rather than them being the ones that split apart right. and scatter to go underneath those experienced skips, because then we're not getting as much development of the younger generation. I guess, you know, if I think back 20 years and, you know, Reed Carruthers came up and played with Jeff Stoughton and then,
yep.
you know, sort of graduated into skipping his own team. So we do see that kind of thing happen. But I always think of like John Morris or Brad Gushue coming up through junior, having their own teams, their own success. John Morris went away and did his own thing, but then came back and skipped again and yep. also had his own success. So
yeah, I think Tyler Tardy is going to be an interesting one too, yeah. just to see about the model of, okay, you're probably the most successful junior player, junior skip we've ever had. Then he goes and learns from Kevin Cooey for a few years.
Yeah.
And then I presume that he will come back and skip again, compared to, say, Botcher and Dunstone, who skipped through juniors and then continued to skip all the way through. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, got their doors blown off a few times along the way, but that's part of the process.
Exactly.
And, so what is sort of the best development? And obviously everyone's development is going to be different depending on what works for them. But there's two very clear different paths that those two guys took and then what Tyler Tardy decided to do. And we'll have to wait and see once mm-hmm. their careers are respectfully over. But kind of interesting as we look ahead when you consider what this field was on the men's side. On the women's side, I think it's a little different, only in that there are some younger teams who are knocking at the door at the trials and at that level. But really in Canada, there's Team A, maybe there's Team 1A, maybe, probably Team 2 at this point. And then there's everybody else yeah. at this point on the women's side. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a fun event where Selena Sturme gets the final berth into the women's curling trials, along with Danielle Schmiemann, Desiree Haas, and Paige Papley from Edmonton. They beat Kayla McMillan's rank in the third and final game of that best of three. I did not see the game on Sunday, Scott, but I did catch the game Saturday night that Kayla McMillan's team won. If memory serves, it was 5-5. I can't remember what end it was. It was after the break. And Selena Sturme had a pretty open draw against five and just a scooch heavy on it. And it was a steal of five.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, game over. So I had two screens going. So I was focusing then back on whatever I had on the other screen, probably baseball. And
yeah.
peeked over every once in a while. And then the next thing I knew, it's 10-9. And yeah. Selena Sturme is right back in this game. And so as I watched it closer and closer, as it got close, as the score got closer, it occurred to me that I think both of these teams are going to have to play much. Whoever gets through is going to have to play better at the trials than what at least that game was. And I don't know if Sunday got any better. Selena, based on the score, you'd say probably Selena and her team were a little tighter yeah. on what they were doing. But that game Saturday night did not inspire too much confidence, I have to say.
No, yeah. And you're right. On Sunday, it was, again, like Selena Sturme kind of taking control in those middle ends with a few steals in a row. So you got to assume there were some missed shots there. You're right. Neither team, I think, would say that they played their best in those games, but one team advances and Selena Sturme's team, they could make some noise, you know, yeah. at the trials. I don't think they're afraid of anybody. And I mean, except they should be afraid of Rachel Holman because she's that good. But they're, you know, I don't think they'll be that intimidated by the environment. They've, you know, showed out at Scotty's before.
Yep.
Have played all these teams. So if you're waiting the field, okay, you pick Holman, then maybe Anderson.
Yep.
And everybody else.
Yeah.
So they belong in the everybody else, right? Like,
yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah. honestly, if Curling Canada would allow it, I don't know if anyone would object to a best of three of Holman against Holman. there to see who goes through and basically decide what jersey they wear, whether it be the red ones or the red, white ones. They just switch between every shot, like put the jacket on with the white to throw and then take it off red and then just keep going back and forth and have everybody play, because that'd be a fun game. Rachel Holman trying to outthink herself.
That would be fun.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really think the women's side is a lot more open. And if Selena Sturman makes the playoffs, I don't think I'd be stunned at it. Whereas on the men's side, I think I would be stunned, right? So
yeah.
If Team McDonald makes it through. Yeah. So as you say, they've been at the Scotties a couple times. They've had some success. So again, the women's field below Rachel Holman, maybe Carrie Anderson, I think is pretty wide open for that third playoff spot.
Yeah, and we'll be releasing our trials preview in a couple of weeks, right? So, you know, we'll have our full thoughts on the field then. But at this point in time, I'd agree.
This is the first time, Scott, that we have a Curling Canada event with the three best of three format for the championship. Not a single game. Both go the full distance in the best of three. They split in the first two. So we get a winner take all game. What did you think of the format and how it played out here?
I thought it was good because, like you say, both the teams that won the first game and the third game.
Yep.
So we wouldn't have had a different result if the first game had been the one that counted, but you probably would have had a different play style. And, you know, like Selena Sturmey missing a draw and giving up a steal of five. If this is a one game playoff, then you go, people like you, Sean, they stop watching.
Yeah.
Right. They turn something else on and they probably don't come back. So, and I mean, they weren't able to come back on the scoreboard, but the viewers also probably go away. So this is a way I think you can mitigate some of the risk, that comes from a TV perspective. At the same time, you don't know if you're going to crown your winner on the Saturday or on the Sunday.
Yep.
Which also makes it hard for people to be like, well, when am I supposed to watch? Like, which one's important? So.
Yeah. Well, especially I think for curling, where a lot of people like to travel to these events, like the trials for sure. Like it's people come from across the country to go to it. So the championship weekend becomes a lot more uncertain, but I'll tell you what, if you end up with a free Sunday in Halifax, you know, there's stuff to do.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff to do. And this was in Wolfville. Yeah, there's stuff to do in Wolfville.
Less to do.
There's stuff.
Well, I've been there. I mean, I've never been to Wolfville. I'm sure it's lovely, but I would imagine there's just less than in Halifax.
Yeah, probably less. There's just less
based purely on numbers.
There's some good breweries, you know.
Yeah.
Wineries. They do make wine in the valley, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, it's lovely.
Yeah. So there you go. So that will be the format for the trials. Best out of three in the finals. So yeah, it could end on Saturday, could end on Sunday. Of course, I think probably rooting for these series to go three, I would think. Curling Canada, maybe on the women's side, might not be rooting for it to go three, given like what we said about just how dominant Rachel Holman has been, not only in Canada, but internationally. I Curling Canada is going to say, we just want whoever's the best team that week to go. Yeah. If you gave them all truth serum, they probably want Rachel Holman and that team to go. On the men's side, I think they are maybe a little more agnostic there because they got a lot of top-notch teams.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth there.
Yeah. So there you have it. That is the trials field set. We also had the Pan Continental Curling Championships take place down in Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes. And Scott, it was Rachel Holman. Oh no, sorry, I'm on the wrong tab here. But Rachel Holman was Team Canada, but she did not win the Pan Continental Curling Championship. Instead, it was Team China that got the win. So that is Rui Wang with the win, 7-6 in the final there. The decisive point comes in the seventh end, and it was a steal from the Chinese side. So congratulations to China. What a run for the Chinese women's curling program from last year at the World Championship, going on that run to get into the Olympics. And now we have a Pan Continental Championship. There's something here, Scott. Look out for them in Italy.
Yeah, something cooking. I think, you know, for those few years they didn't participate, maybe everybody kind of forgot that they're a good program, solid players. So a little surprising. I'll say it is probably very surprising to me that that Team Holman didn't win, but they didn't go through undefeated. China did, and China beat them in the final. So, you know, not much more to say about it than that. I think Canada lost to the US and China. Well, they definitely lost to China. They lost to Japan. That was who they lost to.
Well, Japan's pretty good too.
In the first draw, yeah. So maybe they were just getting their legs under them, you know. But yeah, definitely not what you expect from Team Holman. I mean, making the finals is a pretty good showing for most teams, but, you know, coming up a point short is just not what you expect.
Nope.
But it happens, and it's a good tune-up event for them. And I don't think they'll really lose sleep at night for not capturing the final Pan-Continental gold medal.
Probably not. Should note that it was Eun-ji Kim and South Korea winning the bronze medal game, beating Tabitha Peterson and the Americans 11-8 there. Over on the men's side, it was a Canadian victory. Brad Jacobs with a 7-3 win over John Schuster of the United States. So the Canadians get the better of the host squad there. So Jacobs comes away with the final Pan Continental Championship. And Scott, I saw photos of this. I didn't see any of it. I didn't see any of the game. But they played the Friday night, and the interviews and the stuff I saw coming out was that the place was packed. It was rocking, and it was a really good game that Friday night. And they were hoping for the same thing in the final. And the images I saw, it was decidedly not that. But maybe I just got a photo of the wrong angle, or maybe it was pregame or I don't know. But from all accounts, the Friday night, great crowd, rocking. And then the Sunday final, I guess the sequel never lives up to the original.
It was Sunday afternoon, the final. Yeah. So, you know, you're rarely going to get a Sunday afternoon in, where were they, in Minnesota?
Minnesota?
Yeah. Where there's a game on, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if the Vikings are playing, you're not going to get a huge crowd out for the curling final in Virginia, Minnesota.
Yeah, it's true.
So, you know, Friday night, I get it. But
yeah,
Sunday afternoon, I understand it not being so raucous. But yeah, that's it. Any final words for the Pan Continental Championship?
Well, I think it's a lovely segue, Scott, because I think we should just take a moment to reflect on the passing of the Pan Continental Curling Championship. It joins such luminaries as the Elite 10, the World Cup of Curling, the Champions Cup, and the America's Challenge as dearly departed curling events in the time that we have done this podcast. And you know, it's just it's a day that makes you think about, you know, how fleeting life can be, and how just the passage of time, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So farewell, Pan Continental Curling Championship. It's been fun. What do you think?
Heartfelt, Sean. I'll tell you what, at the end of the show, I don't I don't want to get step on that. That was great. At the end of the show, I'll read a ChatGPT's eulogy for the Pancontinentals.
Okay, great. Great. I can put some music on that too if you want.
Lovely.
So there you go. So the Pancontinental is no more. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, the whole restructuring of the World Championships, which has a downward effect on the Euros and the Pancontinental Curling Championship. Go back and check that one out. Not the last episode with Pete Townsend, the one before that. Mm-hmm. We get into all the details about what happened there. And then, Scott, we also had a Grand Slam event out in Nisku, Manitoba. Do you remember which one this was?
Was it the... I don't have it up. I have the current one up. But was it the National?
It was not. The Tour Challenge.
That was going to be my second guess.
Yeah, so Rachel Homan, this was before the Pancontinental Curling Championship. Rachel Homan wins this one, beats Silvana Tirinzoni 8-2 in the final there. 19th Grand Slam title for Rachel Homan. That surpasses Kevin Martin for the most among skips for Grand Slams. Mm-hmm. And I will say there is a bit of an issue with the Canadian Press copy on this story, uh-oh, noting that Homan grew up a stone's throw away in nearby Beaumont, Alberta. I think some locals around here would take issue with the growing up in Beaumont. I mean, she lives there now.
Yeah.
Depends on how old you have to be before
when you grow up.
Before you're grown up.
I guess you could say she grew up as a mom in,
I mean, I believe she started her family out there. So maybe, yeah, if you're looking at it that way,
like, I guess, but yeah, that's bullshit. Retraction required.
Retraction for this non, like there's no author given. It's just a CP as general story.
Yeah.
So Homan gets the win there on the women's side. On the men's side, Matt Dunstone loses to Bruce Mowat, who scores a couple deuces in the first and the fourth en route to his 5-2 win. 11th Grand Slam title for Bruce Mowat, who are back, wow, in dominant form yet again.
That's a lot. And I feel like Bruce and the boys sort of came up in 2020, maybe like 2021.
Yeah, I think the bubble worlds in 2021, they had a really good run there. I don't think they won, but they had a really good run there. And that might have been their first, like, sort of establishing themselves as a dominant team. They were obviously around before then. But I think, like, going into the Olympics in 2022, it was, these guys are really good. They're still growing. They're still getting, yeah, there. Like, not a favorite yet, but establishing themselves. And they are well established now.
Well, I guess they got a bronze in 2018 in Las Vegas. So at the Worlds.
But the reason they were there is because they weren't the Olympic team.
That's right.
Right? So,
yeah,
you know, you take that one, again, a world bronze and a world championship is a world championship. Like, you know,
sure,
you're not throwing any stones at anything like that. But they were there because they didn't win to represent GB as the Olympic team.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. And then, yeah, 2021, the bubble with a silver and two golds since then at the Worlds.
Pretty doggone good.
Pretty doggone good. And 11 Grand Slam victories, with their first being in 2017. They did get one in 2017, but then the rest are from 2021 on.
Yeah, so really just a dominant run here for,
yeah,
for them. I think we'll see when we get to the Olympics. We've got to see what happens over the next couple of months, but probably the favorites on the men's side as we look ahead to Italy.
Great.
Anything else from Nisku that you wanted to talk about, Scott? The no blank rule, the one blank per team rule, the stats, I saw the stats that come out about that, scoring, mm-hmm, up a little bit, fewer blanks, especially on the women's side.
Okay.
There was a lot more of an impact on the women's side. In terms of style of play, based on what I saw, it's really hard to tell with the around the rings coverage in terms of style of play. I didn't notice that much of a difference overall. I do think there's less bailing going on. The first end is the big change for sure. Like, you're not playing up and down the first end, but then teams weren't bailing as much.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, right? Because it would be like, well, at least that I can get away with a blank here if everything goes wrong. Like, okay, I've got a chance to bail out and we'll at least get a blank. But yeah, that's when that's not the case, you do have to play a little more finesse and, like you said, not reach for that lever too early.
For sure. And the other thing too that, what was I going to say? Oh, the other thing too that I noticed, nobody really seemed to go with what I thought the obvious strategy was, is to force your team, the other team, to either use their blank or get a cheap single early. I wasn't seeing that strategy, the reverse side.
Yeah, no, me neither.
So a little strange to me, but who knows? Who knows? Should note too that there was the junior slams going on at the same time, the U25 and the U15. They were the ones who got to do the grand slam of karaoke. So good job by them. And a couple locals for us were in that field. And Jordan McNamara and his team, they're local. They play over at the Rideau Club. They made the final in the U25 men's side. So, and a lot of children of famous players were in that field too. So the next generation coming up. So good job by the Grand Slams, including those events.
Definitely, definitely. Like to see the youth movement incorporated.
Yes. So speaking of the youths, Scott, Curling Canada has launched a new skills curling app to support athlete development. It's called Skills Curling. It is a free app that is available through the Apple App Store and the Android App Store. And they're calling it the Reimagined Skills Curling app. I did not know that there was a curling skills app by Curling Canada. But essentially, this allows the athletes to practice and submit scores for a variety of hit and draw shots. The performance is evaluated, stored in their profile, and added to a national leaderboard. And the difficulty levels are customized. So there's U15, U18, U21, and then U25 plus. So presumably, we're eligible for the U25 plus.
All right, let's go.
Like, they should just call it like U150. And then everybody's or U125 and then everybody's in on it, but they have this going on, so you can check it out. I didn't have a chance to download this. I like the idea of this. Again, I did not know that it was something that already existed. The story on this says that it is going to play a role in the regional qualification events for the U15 Rock Fest. So if you're interested in that, and those are U15 regional events across the country, you could check that out, get your scores in. So I'm very excited about this. Jill Brothers is quoted in this story as being very positive about it. She's the technical director of Nova Scotia Curling and an elite player herself. So I like this idea, Scott, of having a training app specific for curling, but at the same time, it also gamifies it. So I think one of the things people just don't like practicing, and it's hard to go out there and come up with drills and things to do to keep yourself engaged. So here's something you can do and keep track of it. And if there's nobody else around, that's okay. Like, you can set up the rocks, you can throw. I kind of like this idea. And again, I didn't know that there was one, but you know, I don't go practice much, but if I do go practice, if I have occasion to, I'll download this and give it a go.
I think so. Yeah. It's a great way to give you ideas for what to do if you don't have a coach, right? If you're just like, I like to throw, I like to try things, but I don't know where to start in setting up kind of a practice. Yeah, definitely. I'm going to download it right now.
All right. So there you go. So that's, I think, all the news and views here from the world of curling over the last few weeks. As you said, as we look ahead, we will be talking about the Euros. We'll be talking about the Canadian Olympic Curling Trials, the American Trials, the Last Chance Qualifier. We're going to be heading out to Halifax for the opening weekend of the Canadian Trials. So we'll be there for the first five draws. Well, we'll be in the city for the first draw, five draws.
Yeah.
And likely at most of those between the two of us. So so we'll have a presence out there. If you see us, say hello, and we'll be on the ground for that. So it should be a fun few weeks coming up here, Scott. Before we run, you wanted to do something with our ChatGPT.
I did. So all of the chat in which I uploaded all the documents and stuff, I reached the end of that chat, but I'm going to start a new chat.
Okay.
I'm going to ask it to break down the number of episodes published per year.
Okay. As we approach the 8-year mark on the show, January 2018, the first episode.
January 2018. And so I also extracted all the episode titles, the published dates, which I then used to correlate all of the transcripts into numbers. So okay. Like, because I had all the transcripts with just the episode titles, but not the episode number.
Right.
So I did that one day. That was okay. My nice. Fun day. So Sean, what would you say? I've got the breakdown here. What would you say is the year in which we published the most podcasts?
I'm going to say 2021.
So close, Sean. But you'll remember in 2020, we had nothing else to do. 2020.
2020. Interesting. But we did daily. Didn't we go daily in 2021 for all the events? No, we were live. We didn't post them on the
feed. We did lives, but we didn't post those. Yeah. This is just from the podcast feed. Okay. So yeah, 2020, 72 episodes.
Whew. I think we might have gone daily at the Briar and Scotty's that year.
I think we did because 2020 we were at the Briar.
At the Briar. Yeah. I was sick.
Yeah, you were really sick. We thought you were COVID patient zero.
Yeah. Whew. That would have been something.
That would have been something. I don't think anybody else got sick.
Nobody else got sick. The people at work were convinced that I had COVID. Because I was off the week of the Briar. We went the opening weekend. I was off the week of the Briar. Mm-hmm. And could barely sit up. I was able to sit up enough to talk into a microphone at the end of the games that I had barely seen because I was sleeping all day. And then had another week of work. And that Friday was the 13th. And that was the end of it. But they were all convinced that I had had COVID. But again, since I was around people the whole time and nobody else got sick, I just...
Yeah, like I think we were in the same hotel room and you didn't get sick or like.
Yeah. And I drove back with Dean and Stammers and nothing like.
Yeah. So, you know, if it was contagious.
Yeah. And it came on after I ate something too. Like I remember the Friday of going before we went to Kingston for that. As I had lunch, something wasn't feeling great, but it can't have been a food thing because I was sick all week.
Yeah.
So.
All right. And then. The second most amount of episodes we did, Sean, was 2018.
Interesting. That surprises me.
That is a bit surprising. 2019 and 2021 had 55 and 54 respectively. And we've trended a bit down since.
We've taken more weeks off. Yeah, we have.
Yeah. So at 2023, we had 33. 2024, we had 34.
Ooh.
This year so far, we're at 28. So we got 6 episodes to go to get to that 34 weeks. And what do they say? Like in TV or in radio, they want you to do usually like 34 to 35 weeks.
Yeah, something like that. So we're in that range.
We're pretty close.
We're in that range.
Now create a monthly breakdown of seasonal patterns.
Yeah, I would say we're probably the most consistent in February and March.
Yeah.
Would be my guess. Probably most inconsistent. I would actually say April, just because travel schedules.
Yeah, you often are away in April.
The other one would be August, again, travel schedules.
Yeah.
Would be the two that I would guess.
Unless we pre-record, right?
Yes, which we have done.
Yeah. Okay, it's thought for 11 seconds so far and is now analyzing.
I'm surprised it's that complicated of a question.
Oh, it's done a Python. Okay. Now I understand. Okay. So you said February, March.
Yeah.
You're right. February and March is the hottest on the heat chart, with an average of 6.5 and 6 episodes, respectively.
Wow.
The dip at the lowest is June.
Yeah.
Okay. We're also pretty low in January, coming out of that holiday.
Yeah, push. That makes sense.
Makes a little bit of sense. So
yeah.
And then they did a episodes by year and month heat chart.
Okay.
February and March 2020. Yeah, those were the ones where we were doing dailies.
Yeah, we did daily at the end of every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 2025. We're down in the 2 episodes a month range, basically, since July.
Yeah, this year has been strange.
I know. As we do have a time blocked every week to do this.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of travel for
a lot of travel going on.
Yeah. So there you have it. Do you have any other questions? The only other one I had was, what is the most commonly used word in our episode titles?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
That exact question. Because it's got to be either preview or recap.
It's definitely one of those. I went through the list of all of them. So
okay.
It could also be Scotty's or Briar.
Nah, because we have Worlds previews and recaps, and so I would be surprised if it's Scotty's or Briar. Curling, yeah. Maybe if the word curling.
The word curling. Hey, that would be good. And we stopped okay. Yeah, the word is curling.
Okay.
The next one is an artifact from possessives, a apostrophe S, e.g. women's, men's.
Right.
Number 2 is cup.
Oh.
36 or 37 count.
Wow.
The next is world.
Yeah.
Then Scotty's, then Briar. Then day, so it would be like day one.
Yeah, because we did a bunch of those, yeah.
Then Canada, then championship, then women, then worlds. So they counted worlds and world separately, then men.
So no recap or preview?
Apparently not.
Huh. Interesting.
Let me see this. How many times is the word recap or preview used? This is great podcasting right here.
High quality.
This is what we stick around at the 43 minute mark for. Okay, so preview 42 times, recap 27 times. So okay. Preview actually is the second.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Absolutely.
And we do more often preview than recap, so
yes,
because sometimes there's not much to say.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. Sometimes there's just things happen.
Yeah. So based on that, Sean, the Coyote Grand Slam of Curling Tahoe.
Yes.
Is happening right now.
It is.
Quick. Who do you pick to win?
I will pick Terenzoni and Jacobs.
Terenzoni and Jacobs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who do you like?
I'm going to pick...
Jared Allen.
Yeah. Who's he playing with? Oh, he's his own skip. I thought he was playing...
I don't think he's actually skipping. They got him real players.
Oh, it's Wayne Madad, John Morris, Jason Smith, and Jared Allen.
Yeah. I don't like their chances.
They're 0-2. I'm going to pick Ross White.
Okay.
On the men's side. And give me Rachel Homan.
All right. Ross White, Rachel Homan. There you have it.
And you're Rachel Homan?
No, Terenzoni.
Oh, Terenzoni. Yeah, yeah. That's why I picked her.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's going on this week out in Tahoe. TV starts Thursday here in Canada. And we'll go through the weekend. So good luck to all the teams out there. And I think that'll do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you have not yet, please do subscribe. We're just get your podcast, like, rate, comment, all that good stuff. Helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Head on over to GameStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. Our gorgeous, blistering orange hoodies arrived for our Monday team. And I was up at the bar after the game, and my man Brian came over and said, from four sheets away, he was intimidated by them. And nice. Was throwing him off. So, you know, it really gives us the psychological edge that the four of us are in these very bright orange. So if you want to intimidate your team, your opponents at least, head on over to the Game of Stones pod and into the merch, into the shop. And a wide range of colors are available on the hoodie. So be sure to check that out. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, Game of Stones Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear in the show, Game of Stones Podcast at gmail.com. All right, Scott, you said you had a eulogy for the Pan Continental Curling Championship.
I do.
Okay.
We gather here today to remember a tournament that was born with purpose, lived with confusion, and departed with barely a pebble moved on the sheet of history. The Pan Continental Curling Championships was created to replace something, qualify something, represent something, and unify. Well, sort of. It tried so hard. It wanted to be the Scotty Bowman of qualification formats. The diplomatic bridge between continents. The event that would bring curling nations together under one respectfully low-stakes roof. Instead, it died as it lived, streamed on TSN Plus at noon on a Thursday. It aimed to elevate competition, but mostly elevated questions like, wait, which tier are we watching? Is this the Canadian A group or the one without Canada? Do we cheer for Japan here? Why are the commentators saying playoff implications? Like this matters deeply to someone. We watched as the teams curled bravely. The athletes gave it their full hearts, as curlers always do, sweeping with conviction, yelling with tactically optimized volume, gesturing earnestly at a house nobody was fully invested in understanding. And yet, like newly renovated community rink that only gets used for Tuesday Quilting Club, the Pan Continental was admired in concept. We will remember its gifts. The chance for Canada to earn qualification points by beating teams still learning draw weight. The heartwarming sight of nations like Kazakhstan and Kenya proudly stepping onto the world stage. The commentary teams trying their honest best to create emotional stakes. The medal ceremonies where everybody clapped politely because they weren't sure who was watching. The Pan Continental didn't ask for glory. It didn't demand banners. It merely wanted to exist, like a polite stranger you meet in a hotel breakfast area during the Continental Cup. But now it goes to join its ancestors in the great curling archive of formats we tried. The Canada Cup, the Continental Cup, Tier 2 Slams, the Olympic pre-trials, the road to the Briar that was actually just Saskatchewan playdowns, and of course, the mixed doubles ranking spreadsheet that was definitely real and definitely mattered. So let us not mourn what it was, a vessel, a qualifier, a quietly competent administrator of World Curling Championship slots. Let us instead celebrate what it taught us. That sometimes a tournament exists not to be watched, not to be understood, but simply to make the spreadsheets balance. Rest in peace, Pan Continental. You did your job. And if we weren't always looking, we still appreciate you. May your ice always be true and your broadcast graphics forever legible. Amen.
What is the Scotty Bowman thing?
I don't know.
That was absolutely delightful, and makes me more and more confident that we got time before these things take over the world.
Our jobs are safe.
Hopefully. So with that, everybody, we'll say thanks so much again for listening. We'll be back with you again next week. But until then, get those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Make the final.